Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. It is Christmas week. And hopefully, I'm talking to the listening audience, are as close to done as possible as far as Christmas shopping. I know sometimes it's you get there and you think you're all done, then you have to sort of put everything out, and you go, oh, we're a little short here or there. But good luck to you on what looks to be a very warm Christmas week. It's going to be a short Christmas week for us here on The Drive today and tomorrow, and then we are off for the rest of the week. As a matter of fact, we're off until January the 2nd. So we'd love to hear from you here today and tomorrow on The Drive. We've got the regular crew here on the Monday edition, Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews.
Yeah, and who knows what we'll be talking about on January the 2nd, right?
I would think there'd be a lot, yes. Probably still be talking about
but
it.
But I'll be talking about it. I mean, who knows what kind of developments there could be with regards to the transfer portal and the college
playoffs,
and the college football playoff. I mean, you've got a lot happening in the next 2 weeks in and around the world of college football. And that'll also be, I mean, that's right before Auburn.
It's the day before SEC basketball.
Yeah, Auburn goes to Athens that weekend and takes on UGA, a UGA team that I don't know if they're still in the top 25.
They are.
Yeah,
they are. They're 23rd, AP 24th in coaches.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're talking about a really interesting showdown in SEC play as well. So, yeah, a lot going on right now and a lot on the horizon with regards to Auburn football and Auburn men's basketball.
Oh, no question about it. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com also with us here as he is on Mondays. I would imagine you always seem to be pretty set ahead of time for Christmas.
Not this year with everything that's happened.
Oh, well, yeah. you've had some big happenings. Yeah. Some planned, some unplanned.
Yeah, yeah, so wife fell and broke her leg a couple weeks ago, so I've been taking care of her, taking care of the house and everything, and trying to get as much done as possible. So I'll be heading out after the show doing some last minute shopping and stuff.
So be prepared for BMAT being out a little
That's
later.
Right.
So
elbowing his way through the aisles and to get to the Turbo Man doll.
I will be patient and yeah. Well, elbows.
Well, that's good. Will Auburn fans be patient, Brian?
Basketball, football.
Things right now. It's a little. There's a little testy, feeling. I mean, Auburn basketball dropping its third. I mean, look, they have played four top 10 teams. Obviously, the first game against Houston was a game that Auburn had multiple opportunities to win in the final minute. The last three have not been the case.
Right.
Now, this past Saturday, the score looked similar. The game felt a little different, but the score still, I mean, Auburn dropping a 28-point decision up in Indianapolis to Purdue.
Yeah, and the way I look at it is this. I think Auburn has played for the best teams in the country, definitely Elite Eight teams, maybe two or three Final Four teams easily, especially Arizona, Michigan, especially. So it's understandable that Auburn lost all four games. And all of them were either away or neutral courts that were favorable to the opposing team, right? Houston was in Houston, wasn't it?
No, Houston was in Birmingham.
Yeah. Oh, Birmingham, that's right.
Arizona was a true road game, and the other
Purdue
two.
Purdue was Indianapolis.
Yeah, Michigan was Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but it's still, none of them were at home.
Right.
Which is absolutely true, and I think there are probably, the case can be made that there are really good teams in the SEC that wouldn't win any of those four games.
Right.
You'd have loved to close the, you know, I guess the Houston games where you got the closest, but are you concerned at all about the margin in these last couple games?
A 11-0 run there at the end that really changed that margin a lot.
Right.
And I looked at it from my column that I wrote today, and last year SEC had four of the top six ranked in the KenPom top 25, whatever he does. I looked, and the highest ranked SEC team is Vanderbilt at 8. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different.
Oh yeah, I mean Vandy's. You know, there are no SEC teams in the top 10. Yep. Vandy's your highest ranked team at 11.
Four of the best teams in the country were SEC teams last year. Like four of the top 7 or 8 teams consistently: Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, and Auburn. Were the very best this year. You know, I think you can wonder about Vanderbilt. Florida's the defending national champion. I think Alabama has a couple of the best wins in the league. You know, going to Illinois and winning that one. Or going to Chicago and beating Illinois. But it's like, I mean, it's a different league. You know, the experience wise. You know, as far as what national contenders. You know, it's a different league, but it's still. I mean, what does concern you, like going into league play about this team? Because I think we've talked about rim protection on defense and the fact that you'd love to crank up the pressure as an undersized team, but feels like right now you're playing. The plan is to play just 2 or 3 guys most of the time at guard.
You touched on the two biggest issues they have right now: size inside. Rim protection from that size, because I don't think Keyshawn Murphy is a great rim protector. I think he does a lot of other things really, really good. I just don't think that's a big part of his game. And then they're not as deep as you thought they would be. Some of the guys that brought in, you know, of course, Emeka's hurt now, but Bashir is not playing, basically. So I think they're maybe short a man in the rotation. That hurts a little bit, although there are some guys like Sebastian Williams Adams, who is much better than I thought he was and is already starting. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, they haven't had some good surprises on that end.
The consistency at times, the lack of from different guys has been a problem. I mean, Kevin Overton, KO, has a really good ball game on Saturday. He was the only guy that could shoot really on Saturday. He's been, you know, he's had a couple of really big ball games, and he's had a couple where he has. Now, I know he's been banged up as well, but I mean, even Tahad has been much more up and down, I think, than anyone would have expected this year. And I think that's something that is a concern. I mean, getting you know, you'll see an outstanding performance. Elijah Freeman goes off for 19 one game, and then you don't, you know, you don't see much the next game. It's just, I know there are a lot of these guys are younger guys, and that's just the way it is. So you're just wondering, you know, when will this group be able to gel together and, you know that what they can count on game in, game out.
And I agree with that, but I do think that that's a big step they can take. And
there's potential is there.
Yeah, and I still think they could take that step. I'm positive on the basketball program right now, and that they will take that step. They will learn to play better together. Some of these guys will start.
I want to see the defense be better.
And the rim protection, to me, like, as long as, and this is a big if, like, if you can keep Keyshawn Murphy healthy, and he can continue to be available, I think between Murph and Jovic and Sebastian, there's potential in the front court. The you know, with
there's potential, but I feel like those guys are more fours than they are fives. Yeah, true posts.
But I mean, to me, the fact that, like, you're leaning so heavily on Tahad and Overton as your backcourt pieces, like, I wonder if this works without a true rim protector. I wonder if this works with an 8-man rotation.
Yeah, me too.
Right, or if you need to be able to crank up the pressure and bring in a Simon or a, you know, we'll see what's going on with Bashir. Maybe Magwood needs to play more. Like, I don't know exactly, you know, which way Steven's going to go with that, because, it just feels like you've got a battle there with trying to figure out what to do to sort out that defense.
Yeah, I mean, so we'd love to hear from you. How do you feel? I mean, look, Auburn's 8-4. Yes, they dropped out of the rankings this week. But when I look around the SEC, I don't know that I've seen teams. Florida concerns me because of their size. But I think Auburn's athleticism can play with just about anybody else in the league. So, I mean, maybe it's just one of those years where, yeah, I think you can – you could make a run of the league. You could possibly have from a good to a very good SEC schedule, but I just don't know that you've got the pieces to be able to make that deep, deep kind of run that, you know, Auburn fans have been thinking they're capable of for the last few years when you had, you know, Janai and Dylan and guys like that.
Those first few SEC games are really big.
They are really big.
Those first, you know, four or five SEC games you play are gonna tell the story, I think, in a lot of ways of what kind of season you're gonna have as far as, are you a contender? Are you someone who's gonna make a run at the league title? Or are you someone who's gonna be middle of the pack or worse in a league that could have a really big middle?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like, are you gonna be because you don't have you have six games before Florida. And I don't know if any of those six teams are necessarily – Arkansas would be the team of those six expected to contend for the SEC title. Maybe Vanderbilt too. But it's like or is Vanderbilt in that first six?
It's a tough opening because Georgia is a team on the rise, and you're playing at Georgia. They're going to be fired up. Texas A&M is always a very tough matchup for Auburn just because – of the way they play. They usually have a bunch of big guys that play real physical, doesn't necessarily work well with Auburn. And then
it's Buckyball now.
Yeah.
Remember,
right.
they went and got Samford's coach, and he's more of a, like, he's playing as unique a style as anyone in the conference, you know, with the sort of up-tempo attack that he's looking to bring. But it's always doesn't seem to matter who the coach is. They've had really physical battles with Texas A&M over the years. I want to see if that continues with the new coach in College Station.
Then you've got the Arkansas game coming up next. At least that one's here early on. But you're right. When you get to the Florida game, I mean, my goodness, you better have done some things before you get there, because you've got that stretch of at Florida hosting Texas, at Knoxville hosting Alabama, and then Vandy. And then at Arkansas. Yeah. My goodness. I mean,
that is a meat grinder.
That is a very tough six-game stretch.
Your second six.
Middle six.
Yeah. There's three-thirds, you know, in the – it's like that first six games is seemingly a chance to establish yourself as a contender that can beat most of the league. That second six is a gut check. How many of those can you win if you want to stay competitive with the best teams in the conference?
That's five teams. I said there's not an SEC team ranked in the top 10, but that's five ranked teams in six games that you have there in that middle six. So yes, that will be quite the challenge there.
And I didn't come away from – I mean, look, you'd love to have gotten closer to beating Michigan or Arizona or Purdue, but I didn't come away from those games thinking, oh, well, because you lost those, the games that we just discussed – a big chunk of those are out of reach.
No,
for this team. No. I think, you know, the ceiling.
No,
for this,
but you don't want to get off to a slow start in the SEC.
The ceiling for this team seems to be as high as we thought it was a couple of weeks ago, as far as, you know, what they could do, who they can beat, what, you know, can they win the SEC? The floor may be a little bit lower than you thought, because you're going to have, maybe you're not going to see Arizona or Purdue level size very often in the SEC. But it's still physical.
Oh, you're going to see athleticism.
It's still physical around the basket, and you're still going to see shooters on the perimeter. And so, I mean, and really good coaches that can figure out what you're not good at defensively and attack it. So I would be careful about dismissing the results against Purdue or Arizona because it's such a good opponent, and hope that the learning experience there provides this team with really valuable information about how they can beat SEC teams.
Yeah, no question. All right, we're just underway here on the Monday edition of The Drive. Love for you to join in. You can give us a call on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321 1390. We'll get to our first break, and we can talk the latest. Auburn has had more players entering the transfer portal. We'll talk.
Yep.
We'll talk about that and a little more about our discussions we had with Alex Golish and some of the other things that have, you know, come out about Auburn's new approach toward NIL and much more here on the Monday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Russell Building Supply is your hometown home improvement store. You'll find what you need when you need it. And as a Russell Rewards member, you'll be in the know about monthly specials and exclusive offers. Russell Building Supply, East University in Auburn, across from Cary Creek Publix.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio. And again, we'd love for you to join in. Let's shift gears, talk a little football. Auburn, golly, Brian, is it 20-21 players now that are that have announced right. that they're planning on entering the portal?
I think we've got it at 22 because we're counting Broderick Shaw now also.
Oh, okay, I had not seen that one.
Yeah, he is not. I don't think he was a part of the team for part of the end of last year, and I think that's just kind of happened.
Oh, okay.
Without it being, you know, announced or anything.
What's your sense in general of, like, is there a takeaway from the number of players you've seen entering the portal so far?
Or? I mean, there are many takeaways, right? My takeaway is I think there's reason for concern. And I wrote about this. I just, over 20 is a lot. Maybe it's to be expected when you have a coaching turnover, but that's not necessarily the case at other places that had coaching turnovers.
Not yet. No, you're right.
Right. And so far, we've got five of that group that is either a starter or a projected starter. And that's, you know, the two cornerbacks, Malik Blockton, Amaris Williams, and
Malcolm
Simmons. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we know of at least a couple more starters or, you know, that fit that category who could be announcing too. I don't want to name them, of course.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's still a week and a half before the
portal. So you're talking about potentially a third, around a third, you know, if that happens, of your projected starting lineup next year leaving on top of signing the 45th signing class in the country. So, yeah, I think that is.
By the way, the lowest ranked signing class since people have been keeping track of
25 years. But when you say reason for concern, does that mean reason to be concerned about the people making the decisions right now and losing those players?
No, not really. It's not really about Freeze or Golish necessarily. This is about Auburn's administration, in my opinion. It was their, you know, decision not to play ball with the big boys this summer that caused Auburn's recruiting class to, you know, tumble down, right? It was in the 80s at one point.
Because that feels like an important distinction. When you say reason for concern, it's like some people could read that
about Auburn football's program.
Okay. Because I just wonder, it's like I would think you've got players who were highly touted who barely played in their first two seasons or their first season leaving. And it's like, okay, you could understand maybe Auburn didn't want to continue paying guys like stars based on potential.
Sure.
And then you've got guys who've shown they can play, and while you do wonder if Auburn could have done more to keep them, it's also understandable that a guy like Malcolm or Jay Crawford or Malik Blockton could say,
Kayan
Lee, could say, I've shown I can play, I'm tired of losing, and everything you can offer me I can get from a team that's going to probably make the playoff next year.
Possibly.
And I don't know how Auburn I don't know how Auburn matches that offer.
No, you don't have an answer for that until
you
win.
I guess my takeaway
unless
is...
Unless you pay a little bit more sometimes.
Maybe, but does that fix, like...
I don't know.
If one of those guys wants Alex Golish to look him in the eye and say, are we going to make the playoff next year? Because they could look... Because Kirby Smart can do that. More or less. Kalen DeBoer can probably say that with more of a guarantee than Alex Golish can. My takeaway is, a lot of Hugh Freeze recruits are going to leave. And you probably need to brace yourself for the fact that a lot of Hugh Freeze recruits are going to leave. And if Alex Golish is going to win, He's probably not going to do it by convincing Hugh Freeze's recruits to stay. And it stinks to think that 23, 24, and 25 were as much of a waste as they probably are going to end up being. But that's my takeaway as far as, like, here we are.
Yeah.
A lot of guys that signed to play for Auburn under Hugh Freeze are going to decide to go play somewhere else.
Well, and the other takeaway is this. If you're not going to pay for a top 10 class or top 15 class, and to remind you, LSU and Florida, which both went under coaching changes, had top 12 classes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not going to pay to keep a good portion of your roster, then I'm just going to assume that if, you know, you are proclaiming that this is going to be a $30 million roster and you have as much money as you need, I'm going to assume that this is going to be one of the greatest portal classes in the country.
It
starting
needs
January
to be.
2nd.
Because it needs to be.
Who you
because
lose.
Because they're running out of excuses.
Yes.
And I'm talking about the administration. I'm not talking about Freeze. I'm not talking about Golish.
But,
okay.
But who you lose in the portal when you do a coach? We did this between Harsin and Freeze. We did this from Gus to Harsin. Who you lose in the portal, especially in that first off season, it's not as important as, like, can you get the ball rolling to reverse those losses? Who you bring in, is the message landing with outsiders? And I think you're absolutely right. Like, who can Alex Golish and company convince this year and over the course of the next year? Who can they convince to come play for Auburn? And who can they successfully sell their vision to outside of the program?
I mean, look, there have been many head coaches that come into programs and they have that bump of, this is how we're going to do it. It's going to be exciting. We're going to do things this way. I mean, they're able to sell people on that. So, I mean, again, I as a person who covers Auburn, and I'm also speaking for fans that cover Auburn, that have seen this team lose for five straight seasons, the worst stretch in the history of this football program, I don't think we should have excuses or reasons to continue failing. I think it's time for this program to do every single thing it can to push the envelope and to get a good to great football team on the field starting August or September, whatever, next season.
Well,
I'm just tired of all the excuses.
Well, it's going to be really interesting because, I mean, there's no just as we talked with Alex Golish the other day, and we talked about the stories that have been put out there. Hoke wrote one,
about
you know, the approach being different, not front loading.
Right.
Now, I asked Alex Golish, does that mean, you know, he had talked about competing with the big boys and recruiting the elite players in the nation.
Okay.
And he said, we will have the resources to do that, but it sounded like there will be a select few that they don't want to overspend on their entire class. They want to cherry pick, the best players, which obviously they were way, way behind in trying to do that this year.
Sure they were.
But, I mean, you've got to recruit better than Auburn recruited this year.
You do. Are you going to be moving to the AAC?
Or you'll be nothing, but you'll be flipping your roster every year from the portal.
Right. I mean,
until you're no longer.
I guess I'm okay with their plan for it. And that plan might have worked great if it started 3 years ago, but it feels like with what's happened with the recruiting class and now with the portal. With the roster and that plan, that you're talking about rebuilding again.
Well, I mean, here's the thing.
That's what it sounds like to
right
me.
Right now, I mean, we don't know because nobody's in the portal. Are there two corners out there better than Kaylee and Jay Crawford?
Probably. Is Auburn going to pay to get them?
That's what
I don't know.
I guess my thing about rebuilding again is when you step into a program that had a losing season last year. That's almost. I mean, you were building last year, right? Like, it's not like it's taking over a finished product. And it's like, I mean, if you take over a team that won 10 games last year and you start talking about rebuilding, I understand why people would say, well, that's not what we expect.
Well,
I look at Josh Heupel showing up at Tennessee and going from, I think they won 7 in his first year after losing three, or they'd won 3 or 4 the year before. Lane Kiffin went 5-5 in his first year at Ole Miss. I mean, so I think that there's, like, I think it's important to show progress. Like, if this thing's worse in year one than it was you know, through, for much of the freeze of the final year freeze, I think that could that could spook some folks.
It'd be hard to convince people that, that you're headed in the right direction.
Exactly, but I do wonder how important like a year one breakthrough is for Alex Golish. Keep in mind, I mean, it took him 3 years to. I mean, well, he won seven in his first.
Yeah,
he went
to a bowl game. Yeah. He went to a bowl game.
Took him 3 years to contend for that league, right. down at USF.
But anyway, Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays. I'm so sorry for being this way right now.
Well, I mean, you can't not notice this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going on. I mean, you see the what is going to be a pretty large exodus of players, and you're wondering, you know, all right, so what's going to be out there? What are you going to get? And they've got a large staff that as Alex Golish was talking with us the other day, they're evaluating constantly, and they've got to know who these guys are and try to go out there and bring them in if they're going to compete.
I would imagine this is especially jarring to folks who thought a lot of the 2025 roster was going to stick around.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I mean, a lot of people will. If DJ Durkin isn't here, we won't have a roster. Now DJ Durkin is here, and a lot of defensive players have left.
And maybe that represents the sort of tiny Grinch heart that I have. Under no circumstances did I think a lot of Hugh Freeze players were going to stick around after Hugh Freeze was let go. It just seems to me like they bought his message. They bought into him. They accepted his financial offers, and without him, they're liable to show their mercenary true colors and leave, possibly. And that's fine. That's what players can do in this day and age of college football. But yeah, I guess I'm not as surprised by the events of the last few weeks, because I didn't think very many Hugh Freeze players were sticking around.
No, now of course I also didn't know that there would be the change in philosophy that we've seen, which is really interesting. And again, I mean, I don't know if this is going to work or not, but I mean, I can understand if a head coach and his staff come in and they go, we're paying what for what production?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can see where...
Because he was a five-star coming out of high school.
No, I get it, too. I mean...
You're going to keep paying guys like stars based on...
Well, then what do you... I mean,
potential?
The thing is, do you think everybody is going to be happy, just as happy 3 years from now as they are now? Anyone who is in a situation now expects it to get better year by year. Yeah. And if you've already dug yourself that deep a hole on players that haven't done anything yet, what's going to happen if they do? I mean, how can you afford that?
Yeah.
I mean, Brian, sooner or later, somewhere, somehow, there have to be some guidelines or some parameters. I mean, it can't...
You're talking about the thought of everybody being eligible to leave after every season?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they need to sit down and do what I've been saying for more than a year now, is collective bargain. They've been, you know, throwing money at Congress and... going up there with champagne,
ready
to
celebrate.
Somebody
come solve the problems for us.
Yes.
That's what it's been. We can't do it.
They've tried to hang their hat on the new CSC, and their original guidelines have already been thrown in the trash, basically, and the form or the whatever it's called, the thing they want everybody to sign to guarantee they won't be sued or, you know, whatever, and everybody's like, no, we're not signing that. It's just a big joke. And I think more college administrators are coming to the realization that they have to collect a bargain. That is the only way to get this done. It's the best way to get this done, because then you can have some real enforceable rules,
right,
to run college football as far as transfers and compensation, all those things.
And you know what else it would do? I mean, it would make things a lot easier for us, but for the fans too. I mean, they'd have a real idea of what's going on, because if that were the case, a lot of it would be public knowledge. I mean, you know, now in the pros, you know what somebody's making, or you know what people are offering. Here, you have an idea, but sometimes, you know, agents are just inflating things.
Although if we are talking about guys only having 4 or 5 years, the thought of signing away three of those immediately is a little bit different than a pro.
It's tremendously different. It's tremendously different.
And I don't know what the answer is.
But you see guys... once they've established signing 10 and 15 year deals, and you know their careers aren't even going to last that long.
And even in a collective bargaining sort of situation, I do wonder if players will especially fight for the opportunity to leave if their coach is fired. As Auburn,
in the aftermath of a coaching change.
I would think that
would be something that could be worked out.
Right. So I think there's situations like the one Golish is stepping into right now are going to be fairly commonplace in college football without major.
Yeah, but you know what? You wouldn't have as big a surprise for the people that are coming in. They'd have an idea already coming in. Let's see what the payroll is. You know, before you're even hired.
Take a look under the hood.
Yeah, it's like we'll take our bottom of the hour break. We'll start. We'll get to the phone lines, and I believe Pat will get us started here on the Monday Drive.
There's no 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews, MauburnSports.com. BMAT stepped out for a moment. He'll be back in shortly. But let's get to the drive hotline. It's Pat. Gets us started today. Hey, Pat.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. That sucks. I was going to tell Brian that I agree with him completely.
As a matter of fact, he's just walking back in and just got the headphones on, so you can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I wanted to tell you, Brian, that I agree with you agreeing completely. That's exactly the same feeling I had. That's why I wanted Kiffin. And I'm not saying that Kiffin was the perfect answer, but I think it would have – I don't think everybody would have been leaving the door. That was the one person I thought that he would keep the players here for the quickest turnaround. And if we weren't going to get him, then to me, if you've got money, you throw it. You throw it as much money this year as possible to keep the players that are already here. Because the best way to keep the best way to get good players here is to keep the good ones that already wanted to go here, that are already here. If you're going to go try to get them out of the portal, now you're bidding against everybody else, and they're not already here. So you're it's like it's twice as hard to get them. And so I think if we don't throw the money, you know, this is the year where there's no rules. Oh, Auburn's got 30, LSU's got 25, so-and-so's got. These obviously are numbers that are not. There is no obvious law, rule, whatever, that's you're going to get punished if you go over. So this is the year to break the rules. In my mind, just throw the money, keep the players, ask for forgiveness later. They're not going to come down on anybody. They're not going to do it.
Well, there's no salary cap. There's no cap. I mean, you got to remember what it is there's a minimum. Every team has agreed that they're going to spend 20. There's nobody that is saying, oh, they're going to stop me at 30 or 35 or, you know, whatever.
That's right. So, but if there was ever one year to spend the money, this is it. Keep the players, win 8, 9, 10 games, make the playoffs with Byron Brown. And then now you have a winning program, and now you can convince people to stay and maybe not pay as much money. And then you can get some other people to come. If you don't do it now and we go 6-6 next year, we're never going to dig out. We're never going to dig out. I trust Golish could do it. I think, like Brian said perfectly, 3 years ago, yes. 4 years ago, yes. Before this portal and all this craziness that's going on now. But I'm gonna tell you all the answer, the solution that's going to come along, and I'm telling you how it's going to solve it. I know everybody says collective bargaining. I'm just telling you it's not legal unless you get everybody to agree, and I just don't believe it's going to happen. If it happens, that's the answer. But it's not going to happen. The answer to the question, and a lot of people are complaining, oh, my God, these are just – I can't watch it anymore. Nobody comes and stays because they love Auburn. And it's like you know, and it's irritating because it's like – you watch the NFL where it's like they pay them $50 million, but our people are making $1 million or $500,000, and, you know, but they're mercenaries. But I guess if you were in the real world, if you left for another job, you're a mercenary. So everybody's really a mercenary because that's what nobody stays at one job just because they love it to where they make way less money if they have other options. I mean, you might stay if it's close, but you're not going to stay for half the money. But the answer to the question is this: it's the free market. Okay? It's what's coming, and I'm telling you right now, with what's his name, the guy that's in his seventh year, not Pavia, but the other guy, TJ Finley. Okay, I know everybody's like, oh, we don't want people to stay in college forever. Well, there is no rule that says when you go to college, you have to do it in 4 years. Okay, if I go in engineering and they say you have 4 years to go to college, and once that 4 years is up, your 4 years is gone, you no longer can go to college anymore. You have to go find another way to make money. Okay, that would never fly. It would be so unconstitutional. It would never go. Okay, and it will never be that case because colleges would never do that. We have doctors. We have all kinds of people getting PhDs. There's just no way that that would float. So therefore, why is it different for people that play football? They can go to college as long as they want. There are people that are 40 years old going to college. I know it's just, oh, well, it's not the way it's ever been. You know, it's, college wasn't meant for people that are 28. It wasn't meant for that. And you're like, okay, well, I get that. But things are different. Now we're in a mercenary thing. The way to lower the cost of all these players is to let the 12 good college quarterbacks that are now no longer can play because they're not good enough for the NFL, but there's nowhere else to go. Let them stay. Let 22 more cornerbacks stay. And now the high school guys are no longer in demand. The four-star high school guys can no longer command $500,000. Now they got to go somewhere and get on a roster and come in for cheap. And now instead of going and paying this guy, you know, if you only have one, there's only two quarterbacks in the portal, so we got to give him $4 million. Okay, well, if there's seven quarterbacks in the portal, okay, and seven quarterbacks stayed at their school that they were at, okay, now the prices go down, and it doesn't become this $50 million roster. That's the law of supply and demand in America. When there's so much product on the field, then they can't command the money. Right now, we keep kicking all the good players out that are good enough to play in college and start, but not good enough to go pro. We kick them out and let them go become used car salesmen and insurance salesmen, and that's the way it's been. But it's a totally different world. And the legality of it is, it's not right to tell someone they can't go to college for only 4 years or 5 years. It's not. So at some point, the TJ Finleys and the Pavias are going to say, look, I'm making $1 million, $2 million, and now you're telling me I can't do it. Why can't I keep doing it?
Well, that was a natural – see, that was a natural thing, like the domino that was going to fall once you gave folks sort of a financial incentive to play every drop of their – use every drop of their college eligibility. The question was going to be, well, why should eligibility only be 4 years or 5 years? And eligibility is something of a construct. We learned that during COVID when they arbitrarily started giving years to people. But I know, Pat, you've been beating the drum of unlimited eligibility for all. And I think there are some who could warm to that idea. There are other folks who seem to, you know, they're firm in wanting some time limit. Right, if it's 4 years, if it's 5 years, if it's 6 years, I don't want to speak for you guys here, but like,
I just wonder who's going to be I guess junior colleges would be huge beneficiaries from something like this, because what this is going to do, it's going to make it much more difficult for high school players, for kids coming out of high school. The elite, the very tip top, might get a shot, but it's going to be much tougher if everybody is able to retain much more of their rosters, and you don't have it turning over. Because what's the next step going to be? Hey, I don't want to graduate from high school yet because I'm not ready to play in college. I need to play till I'm 25 in high school.
I do wonder though, and I want to get Brian's thoughts on this too. Like, because we'll never know the answer to like how many of the players leaving, especially I think the established like starters for Auburn, how much of their decision to leave is based on money. Like, how much of this is they have a number in mind and Auburn's not meeting it and they're going to go shopping in the portal for someone who will versus wanting other things that Auburn maybe can't provide, especially whether it's on field success, whether it's a track record of sending guys to the NFL at the position. Like, I do, like, what's your sense of how much, like, when you talk about the biggest names to leave Auburn in the portal in the last couple of weeks?
Do you think it's mostly money or all money?
I think it's mostly money. I wouldn't say all money. I mean, not winning plays a part, right? But money can make the difference, right?
It's what talks, famously.
I mean, it really is. So, it's not all money, but a lot of it is, right? It just is. And a lot of these players just want to go out there and test the market and see how much they can make. So it's possible that some of them go out there, the offers aren't what they think they are, and they decide to come back to Auburn for whatever reason. That can happen. So we'll just have to wait and see. It's going to be, once January 2nd hits, it's going to be wild to see how this goes down. Early in January.
Wild, wild west. All right, Pat, we're back to you.
Okay, yeah, well, here's what you said is exactly right, but think about it. The reason they're testing the market is because the market needs people, okay? Because Vanderbilt's going to lose four starting linemen that aren't good enough to go pro, but they all played together for 5 years. If they weren't all leaving Vanderbilt, then there wouldn't be a need for Vanderbilt to go play for another player. So what I'm saying is we keep shoving out the good talent to go do nothing. That would keep it from being where we only have seven quarterbacks and we only have five great cornerbacks, and so they all get so much money. If you let the people just stay and look, people, they get 28, 29, they may get tired of it, but schools may not want to keep the guy. There may be another guy will come along, but what it'll do is it'll make the freshmen, they'll come in and they'll say, well, look, I'm not going to make any money. I'll be happy if I make $100,000. Okay, you're a good four-star. Come here, and now we build you up. Now you've got people on your practice team. You got people getting better, and they come up in the mix, and then they start producing, and then they can command the money. Look, I think it's all backwards right now. Why are you giving a bunch of freshmen who've done nothing and a bunch of five-stars who've done nothing all this money for the first 3 years until they actually do something? That's the whole problem, is we keep kicking out the experienced people that are not good enough to go pro.
Maybe that's the lesson of the Hugh Freeze era. Like, of all the things we've talked about, like, maybe
don't overpay before they're worth it. Yeah,
that's right. But there's not enough people because all the good ones. Are
there enough somewhere? I mean, I'm looking around. I see a lot of teams that are able to do a whole lot better than Auburn has over the last few years. So some folks have figured it out.
Yeah, I'm just saying, let the market fill back up with people, with players that don't want to leave. Look, there are guys that go off in the Navy or whatever, and they go off on retreats, and they come back, and they're playing at 30. You can't tell me there's not somebody playing 28, 29. It's just a number. You can look at someone on the sideline. There's an 18-year-old guy, and he looks 35. I mean, there's people in the NBA or in the NFL that are 18 years playing with 40-year-old guys. I mean, what's the deal? We basically are a pre-NFL kind of thing. We're an entertainment for colleges, for their students, for their alumni to enjoy and have something to look forward to, and it makes a bunch of money for the school. So just it is what it is, okay? It's not a bunch of 18-year-old kids, high school kids.
What you're describing, Pat, is semi-professional football, where colleges basically license their names to the teams.
Which is what a lot of colleges just don't want to do. So, I mean, that's the problem
like
that you have is
now.
Colleges don't want to do that.
And but they like
been,
the, but they
been
like
attempts
the...
to bring up, you know, USFLs, UFL, whatever, things like that for those players in between. And that's sort of what you're talking about.
Even some of those colleges, Pat, we got to let you go, but even some of those colleges like the money from ESPN and Fox.
Yeah, you're right about
ABC.
That.
They do like that part of it.
Yeah, but do they like the way it's going right now? I mean, right now, like you said, it's like a train wreck. That's the way to solve it. It's not perfect, but it does solve the problem. You have enough athletes out there where you don't have to pay them $2 million, $3 million each. That's the way to do it.
I think, yeah, I mean, flooding the market with older talent would sort of it would have an impact on demand, right? I mean, I think if you suddenly increase the supply
of
those kind of players, but it's an interesting idea.
All right, we need to get to our final break. We've got more calls holding. Hang on, we'll be right back here on the Monday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And let's get back to the Drive hotline. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys. Besides Crawford, who are all these guys that are going in, said they're going in the portal, that Auburn's going to really be sad that they left.
I would say guys who play.
Kay and Lee, I hope he goes to Georgia and starts. Good Lord. We ought to have 20 balls thrown his way. I mean, he did good football this year at all.
No, but
I mean, he gave up about as many receptions as any cornerback in the SEC this year.
Cam didn't have a great year, although I heard a lot of people saying, "Thank goodness Keontae Scott's gone." He looked pretty good at Miami this year.
Yeah, he was, and I thought Cam was better. My biggest knock on Cam his first two seasons was his open field tackling. I thought he improved in that area this year. So.
There were coverage breakdowns this year, but no, I think that
if he wasn't getting toasted, he was getting a penalty called on him.
So guys who played a lot the last 2 years that have gone into the portal for Auburn, Kayan, Jay Crawford, Malik Blockton was on the defensive line a lot. I would put Malcolm Simmons on that list potentially.
Let's put it this way: as long as Cam Coleman and Singleton stay, mm-hmm. Auburn should have a better receiving corps this coming year. Because I've seen the guys at South Florida play, and they can say that they didn't play against people. But there's the one guy had 100-yard games against Miami, and you know did well against Florida and Boise State. So I mean, he doesn't have as many drops as a lot of our guys have.
But I think you're making a good point though, Brett. I think it's interesting. Interesting thing to consider. Exactly what you're leading.
And Malik Blockton, there's guys Auburn's looking at right now that have made a lot more plays than he did this year.
Well, I think that's one of the things that this staff has looked at and said, you know, what are we getting for what we're paying? And they need to get a bit of return on investment.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
Yep. Hey, we're done with hour number one, halfway through. Come on in and join us for the second hour of the show.
At 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Christmas week, yes, just hard to believe, just 3 days away. I was explaining to Kennedy, my 3-year-old granddaughter, yesterday. She's got one of the things that she has is a little, I guess it's sort of like Olaf, but it's like Frosty, whatever, with a carrot nose, and you count down the days. And I was, you know, telling her yesterday that when she wakes up today, it's only 3 more days.
She's got like a snowman advent sort of deal going
on.
Very cool.
That's cool. Counting it down. I mean, she's not quite old enough yet to you know, just be as into it yet. I mean, just 3, and then. But yeah, hopefully
Christmas is going to be a very big deal for her. I think the next couple of years, and with younger siblings around too. It's going to be very exciting. She'll have a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. We're looking forward to it. Hope everybody is doing well and not too freaked out, panicked about the last minute things need to be done before Christmas.
Or what you've seen from Auburn over the last couple of weeks.
You're right. As we shift into what we usually talk about. We were talking in hour number one. We talked a little basketball at the top. We can get back into that in a little bit, but wanted to get Brian into some thoughts. We've talked about a lot of the guys that are entering the portal. Ashton Daniels also entering the portal today.
Yep.
The name that a lot of people at Auburn have been following, wondering, you know, expecting him to announce that he was going to enter the portal, and that is Byron Brown,
yep.
The South Florida quarterback who put up phenomenal numbers for Alex Golish and company this past year especially.
Yeah, that's a big one. We've been anticipating that. And even before that, I think there's been a reasonable expectation that he would get in the portal and he would come to Auburn. That's not a guarantee, but no. I think certainly that's going to be something that everybody will be watching closely.
Well, we were talking here in the studio, and if he doesn't wind up at Auburn, then there may be some serious distress.
Yeah, and you know the importance of getting a guy like him. He threw for over 3,000 yards, rushed for over 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been in that offense for 3 years. Not mistaken. I know he's hurt 1 year.
He has. He's been at South Florida for his entire career.
Yeah. So he has 1 year of eligibility left. I mean, you're getting a guy who knows the offense, who can lead the other players during the offseason with the offense and may want to prove himself on this level. Maybe he has a little chip on his shoulder. I don't know him, so I don't know all
three
his motivations.
Three-star out of high school.
Like.
Right. Yeah, three-star out of high school. Big kid. I mean, he's good size. Yeah, 6'3", 230 or so.
I made this point, Brian, and this is a throwback. This is not for younger listeners, but multiple times during South Florida games this year, announcers made the comparison to Dante Culpepper, who was Central Florida's quarterback 25, 30 years ago, had a couple of very productive seasons with the Minnesota Vikings before injuries shortened his NFL career. But that's a 235, 240-pound, maybe even bigger than that by the time he was a pro. But a guy who was not afraid of contact but could also make smart decisions running the ball and could make every single throw.
Yeah.
So, short and on time. That's the important thing about Byron Brown, is that the physical – the running ability, the fact that he had 1,000 yards rushing is cool, but it's the idea that you're getting a guy who can make every throw accurately and on time. That's the prize that Byron Brown represents in the transfer portal to whoever gets
big,
you.
And prize for Goldlist and Company, just because having a reliable quarterback that knows the offense.
Yeah, somebody they don't have to teach the offense to.
It is such an upgrade over what Auburn's had for the last several years.
And all right, so I was asked today, it's like, well, what's the difference? We've seen how that works at Auburn over the last 3 years. No, you haven't. You have not seen someone who has been playing quarterback and putting up those kinds of numbers for the coach and for the play caller.
You haven't signed a quarterback coming off of that kind of season.
No,
much
less one who was making those plays for the play caller, who's going to be calling plays.
Yeah, exactly.
Stidham would be the closest thing. Right. Stidham played well down the stretch for Baylor, and then there was a delay.
Yeah, when you're able to, as a head coach, and have your offensive coordinator bring a quarterback, a very successful quarterback with them, That is a completely different story.
I mean, Cam,
than going out in the portal and finding someone and bringing them in, especially someone who has not, either an all conference. I mean, look, Peyton Thorne had a very good sophomore.
He was not coming off a season like this.
But he wasn't coming off a great year.
No.
His next year, he sort of dipped.
And he was asked
to
do something that he really wasn't doing.
And if you're going to
run a completely different offense with different coaches.
Yeah. If you're going to dismiss Byron Brown's production because it didn't come at the major conference level, if you're going to say, it was just against American competition, well, then you would have bet against Diego Pavia coming to Vanderbilt.
You had a great point a while ago when we're off the air.
And that's the thing is, if you're going to
say, but look at Deuce Knight.
If you're going to, and I understand, falling in love with Deuce Knight's potential, but
absolutely,
the fact is, last year, Oklahoma had a 5-star quarterback named Jackson Arnold who had a lot of eligibility left, and they tossed him aside for the big time quarterback who had played for their new coach, John Mateer. And while it ended with a playoff loss at home.
Yeah, blowing a 17-0 lead. We haven't even talked about that.
No, we haven't. That's a 10-2 season.
Yeah, you're right.
Despite some injuries there, and I just think you can't.
Would you take that?
I mean, I would.
Florida last year, he threw for 260 yards and a touchdown, no interceptions, ran for 69 yards. That's pretty good. Completed 23 of 36. I don't know what that percentage is, but that's pretty good.
I love Deuce Knight's potential, but if signing Byron Brown costs you Deuce Knight, then I wish Deuce Knight all the luck in the world wherever he goes. That's my stance on this. With Byron Brown, it seems too easy. Right, with Byron Brown and his coaches now at Auburn.
Yes, absolutely.
If you can
get him, you absolutely go get him.
How about old Blue Eyes? Old Blue Eyes is on the phone.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm glad that B-Matt's there because we got the Monday musings, and I know probably knows a little bit about Old Blue Eyes.
Oh yes, Frank Sinatra.
Yes. Do you remember what Frank Sinatra's favorite drink was, Brian?
Oh.
Jack Daniels.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's yeah.
Yes. He was they put a bottle of Jack Daniels in his casket when he was buried.
That's good. That's good. That's good.
No, but reason I was calling is, and y'all might have talked about this over the last couple of months, but I never hear anything about it. Where is academics falling into all of this transfer and NIL? I never hear anything about.
Is anybody academically ineligible anymore?
I never heard about it.
Great question.
Nothing.
Transferring
zero.
Credits to another school. I don't even know what these guys are majoring in.
I think
that. Do they even go to class?
The rise of the interdisciplinary studies major was explained to me a couple years ago. Helps, it can help athletes who can be on the move to multiple schools. But no, we heard about that a lot more. And occasionally, I remember when it was the Coastal quarterback, and there was talk that maybe academics were playing a role in whether or not he could transfer to his preferred school or not. But no, it seems like that has been shaped to sort of fit the modern world of college football and college athletics, as far as athletes being able to take a lot of that wherever they want to go.
Well, Bill, I know you're involved or were involved with the university for a number of years. I mean, what are those your buddies telling you about how schools are handling academics now?
I don't know any. I really don't. I don't know how to answer that, because most of the folks that were involved, that I was involved with, weren't dealing with an awful lot of athletes over in the College of Engineering. I don't know. I mean, that's a great question, because that used to be one of the biggest concerns with any transfer was your APR, the academic progress rate, was something that the NCAA was all over, and there don't seem to be a lot of problems anywhere in the country.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's just like overnight, nobody talks about academics. I'm just like, you're going to pay an 18-year, 17-year-old kid $2 million, and you think he's going to get up for a 7 a.m. class? Are you kidding me?
Well, here's the other thing is, if you're paying player X $2 million, I mean, is he going to be academically ineligible to miss any of that season? You know what I mean? Is someone going to stand up and say, no, his math homework was late. Like he can't play in the rivalry game Saturday.
Yeah. Well, he could pay one of his buddies $100,000 and just be him for the semester.
I think the opportunity is there to get whatever you want out of your college experience. I think that's how folks would explain it. And if that means you want to seriously pursue a degree in something that could benefit you down the road, or even advanced degrees, that opportunity is there.
Yeah.
And if you want to major in basketball, right? Like it's more that opportunity is also there.
Yeah. Wow. It's just amazing how fast it's changed. And The university just, like I know y'all talked about this the last couple of weeks, but the players have so much of the say in it now. I mean, they've got all of the authority with it. It's just, I don't know, it's just too one-sided. I don't know. It's just interesting. Times are changing.
Oh, they are.
Bob Dylan wasn't kidding. Yep. Great stuff, old Blue Eyes.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
Jeremy is next up.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, guys. I keep expecting to hear an announcement from Georgia, Alabama, that they're going to have a $60 million roster with $30 million of it in deferred payments. They're going to go the Dodgers route.
Yeah.
And they're just going to pay their guys with a Bobby Bonilla contract. We'll pay you $100,000 a year until you're 40. That's how absurd all of this has gotten.
Well, there's no reason not to.
Right.
I mean, that's...
that gives them an edge, and they're able to go out and get the best players in the country.
I mean, they'll do
well, give them an applause, because they've got alumni, board members, and people within the administration that know how to get things done and believe at winning college football games. Yeah, what I mean, is the rest of the country doing?
You've got Utah. Oh. Was it Utah, the school that sold like a share of the athletic department to private equity?
Yeah, for half a billion.
For a quick infusion of cash, believing that they can use that to improve, among other things, the roster in different sports over the next couple of years?
The only contrary to, I don't know who it was that was talking earlier about like letting 8-year players, like I don't need to see Barry Sanders running around on a college football field until he's 30.
He's also proposed that when they're done with the NFL, they could come back. Or if they don't work out of the NFL, go ahead and bring them on back.
At some point, there has to be a hard cap.
Yeah.
This soft floor business will never work. As long as company, you know, school X can outbid school Y for player C, it's never going to work. The reason it works in the NFL is because there is a hard cap. You cannot go over that cap. And until you do that, these guys are going to be bouncing all over.
Yeah, there's a hard cap, and there is also, you know, everyone's not a free agent every year.
Sure. You know, with 130 schools, you're gonna get into, again, like, I'm not worried about, I've been saying for a long time, I'm not worried about a group of five championship. I think most of the group of five should be playing in their own division to begin with. Me and some relatives over the past weekend had a conversation. How many, it used to be just Division 1A schools, were there in 1990?
Probably 75, maybe, you know, I'd say that's within 10 or so.
Yeah.
Less than 100 for sure. I mean, I would say less than,
it was 101.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, there were 101. I agree with you that I think 80 is probably the number. If we could ever get the presidents and the athletic directors to finally grow a pair and put some structure together to where we say,
let's have 420-team leagues. I'd love that.
I think the 420
team leagues with 10 team divisions, you play everybody else in your division, that's 9 games right there, and then you've got a much more balanced schedule.
I think the problem with that right now would be that the SEC and the Big Ten have secured their futures to a degree where they wonder why upset the cart.
Nobody
right
wants
now.
To give. Everybody just wants more.
Like you see the Texas Tech booster was running those commercials earlier in the season, right? About you know, taking congressional action and supporting that act that he was in favor of. And the angle for him is, yeah, because the Big 12 and the ACC have uncertain futures compared to the SEC and the Big 10. So, yeah, it makes sense why Big 12 schools and ACC schools and schools in the group of five would say we need something more equitable for everybody. And they might be right for the overall strength of the industry, but I can understand why the SEC, like that is...
Yeah, why the Habs going to go, that's okay. Yeah.
Sankey's not terribly interested in having... like any of those conversations right now, you know, if it takes a drop away from the SEC's future.
Well, see, that's exactly what I was fixing to say. Here we are talking about academics with these players, and we want our players to do the right thing and stick to your commitment to your school and do all of this, and we can't get the grown-ups who went to school and got their degrees to act like they care anything about the sport other than how do we get more in our pocket?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, look, I've heard everybody talk about all the NIL stuff for the last 2 weeks. I do not contribute a penny to it. I will never contribute a penny to it. I am not going to go down this road. It is not, I do not want anything to do with it. I think it's all a bunch of hot garbage.
It's crowdsourcing. Crowdsourcing paying your labor out to right. your fans is how I've heard right. some folks describe it.
Yeah, you're taking 80,000 fans every Saturday and turning them upside down and shaking them for every penny and every quarter that they got in their pocket.
Yep.
Like, no, I am not participating in this. And that's where all of this, like, there is nothing that makes me want to turn college football off. And I have not watched a bowl game. I only watched a little bit of the playoffs, more than all this NIL crap. I'm done with it.
You know, I had someone say this to me the other day, and I thought, I had never really thought about this.
Great stuff, Jeremy.
What college athletics has turned into, it's just the fantasy game for millionaires. Billionaires. It's their money. They're going to try to get who they want to build the best team that they can. And the rest of the fans, I don't know how they'd fit into when you're talking about fantasy, because nobody wants to watch somebody else play their fantasy. Listen to the highlights of right. other people's fantasy teams, but that's sort of what it's like.
Well, but with even then, you'd need a return on your investment, right? I mean, that's
you
been
need
the
to
big
win. That's right.
Well, that's been the big question with, like, Kenny Dillingham recently was talking about, like, surely there are some millionaires who can cut.
Yeah,
checks.
Yeah, somebody's got to be able to write a $20 million check for us.
You know, a lot of those millionaires became millionaires by not giving
yeah,
away their
exactly right.
$20 million willy nilly, like
yeah.
No, I and
dilly.
I yeah.
Oh, let's get to our first break of hour number two. Yeah, we'll have Brian's Monday Musings, right. and we'd love to hear from you as well here on the Monday Drive.
Free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com. Want to get into the Monday Musings now, Brian?
Sure, we can do it.
All right, let's Brian, of course, every week there at auburnsports.com has his Monday Musings yep. where he has some Auburn athletics thoughts and then some musical musings.
Yeah, and I wrote about what we talked about today. I wrote about the basketball program, my thoughts on it. As they wrap up non-conference, they've got Queens here, I guess, next Monday night. Or
week
from Monday?
From today.
Yeah, a week from today, yeah. At 9 o'clock,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, 9 o'clock next Monday night.
Ooh, it's a late one.
That is.
And then right into the SEC play. And I'm still pretty positive on what this team can do for a couple of reasons. And then I wrote about what we talked a lot about today was a tough recruiting class, players leaving the portal. Auburn's really got to step it up on their end of the portal as far as incoming players.
Yeah, now we've seen other programs lose 30-plus players. Not, I would say Auburn probably is headed that direction now. They're over 20 yeah. right now, and we still have a week and a half to go till the portal even opens.
Yep.
It's going to be crazy, though, because rosters are now expanded to 105
right.
as opposed to 85, and with the players leaving – man, there are tons of openings. So, I mean, there's no telling. I mean, Auburn may be in, you know, looking to bring yeah. in 30, 40 players.
It is going to be a wild 2 weeks. And, of course, it's, you know, that January 2nd through, what is it,
16th.
January 16th.
And classes start the 7th or the 8th.
Right.
So you'll be wanting to get them in
soon.
As quickly as possible
yes.
so that they can go through winter workouts and spring practice.
You've got to get your work done in the first week or the
oh,
first
yeah.
few days.
I would think that first weekend will be
yep.
crazy.
It really will be. It's going to be wild. It'll be amazing to see how many kids actually come through Auburn the first 3 or 4 days that portal mm-hmm. being open. Looking forward to covering that and being a part of that and sharing those results with everybody out there. Musical journey begins with a pineapple. All right, we're going back 46 years, so that's December 22nd, 1979.
Hold on. Pina Colada?
Escape.
Oh! Already got it.
Escape?
Like I said.
The Pina Colada
Rupert
song?
Holmes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
So
Dan on that one quickly. He buzzed in before.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this
I
is the
name
day.
I can name that song.
This
I mean,
is the day 46 years ago.
Lime and the Coconut would be.
But he said pineapple.
Nielsen Schmielsen.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nielsen.
But yeah, a pineapple. You get the Pina Colada song.
Yeah,
So 46 years ago, this song hit number one on the Billboard 100. Stayed there for 2 weeks, so it was the final number one song of the 70s.
Okay.
And then it slipped to number two for a week, and then popped back up to number one on the second week of the 80s, so it was the second number
second
one,
number
of the
one hit of the 80s. Yep. Last bum, number one hit of the bum,
70s. Bum, bum.
But interesting, he did the song as kind of the last minute addition to his fourth album or fifth album.
Well, that's pretty much the only song he's known for.
I know. Yeah, he had another top 10 hit called Him, and I listened to it. I've never heard it before.
Oh, I've heard it. It's awful.
It's just, I agree.
No, it's one of those. Oh, yeah. It's one of those.
How did that get a top 10?
Was that 70s? Was that 70?
It was the same album.
Oh, okay.
Yep, same album. I guess 1980.
It was probably the follow-up, and that's the only reason that it charted.
Probably.
It's because people went, this is the guy that did Pina Colada song.
He's opening and closing his concerts with the Pina Colada song.
That's right.
But I'll mention this too, but for that song, he saw a person at the Village Voice, and that's what he based the song on. It kind of tells that story, right? If you ever listen to the song. And then the original lyrics was, if you like Humphrey Bogart and getting caught in the rain.
Oh, no, that doesn't work nearly as
well. Like
Humphrey Bogart.
Humphrey.
Humphrey. Yeah, you need another syllable in there.
But he changed it, wanting to have a more vacation escape theme to Pina Colada, which he had never tried before. He was just looking for a drink that had a vacation ring to it or something. So that's what he came up with.
Probably one that fit the syllables that he needed, you know.
But even though he's kind of a one-hit wonder, he's been involved in theater, written about 19 different plays or produced them, won 3 Tony Awards, just had a really successful career.
I was going to say, I have not heard much from Rupert Holmes since Escape.
Yep. Wrote songs for the Partridge Family.
Trying to think of drinks that would fit.
Celebrity names with the five syllables, with the right five syllables.
And here's another thing. That's not his real name. His real name is David Goldstein. He changed Rupert as an odd Rupert Brooke, a poet who I'm familiar with, and then Holmes to Sherlock Holmes, the
famous
you detective. Like Audrey Hepburn.
See, it's Audrey.
Catherine.
Catherine, there we go. That one will fit.
Yep, so there you go. But that song still gets a lot of airplay.
Yeah.
If you listen to any 70s or classic rock song,
I think you'll hear it on Wings 94.3. You know what? Yep. That's more of a W. Lee.
That is definitely more W. Lee. I don't know that I've ever heard it on Wings.
96.3 W. Lee is probably playing the
PD. I'd be a little surprised.
And Guardians of the Galaxy, Shrek, a bunch of TV shows too. So, yeah, still out there.
Yeah, if you say it starts with a lime, I'm thinking you're going Margaritaville.
If
you say it starts with a coconut,
lime would get me to Nilsson anyway too. Both
the coconut.
But I told y'all you're good. That was faster than I thought it would be though. Yeah.
All right, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll give you some thoughts on the college football playoffs and more as we head into the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
Remember when you would dream about what you would grow up to be? Imagining your dolls were students or your Legos a skyscraper. Maybe it's time to turn that dream into a reality. At Southern Union State Community College, you can discover your dream career in healthcare, business, manufacturing, engineering, and more. From imaginary to extraordinary at Southern Union State Community College. Visit suscc.edu.
BNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday evening, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews. All right, guys, any biggest surprise from the opening weekend of the college football playoffs?
I mean, Oklahoma going up 17-0 and just falling apart.
They absolutely fell apart.
Yeah. How much of that, too, is, like, as tough as it is you give some credit to Alabama down 17-0.
But I mean, and the Oklahoma drop touchdown, Mateer rolls left, hits a guy in his hands.
Oklahoma handed it to him too often, but you still got to I mean, to be down 17-0 and find the, you know, and find the ability to make.
Oh no, you're right. Alabama outscores them 34-7 for the remainder of the game. Yeah. But I mean, it was all of a sudden it looked like is the punter on the take?
Terrible.
I mean, my goodness, it was bad. The
way stuff starts to snowball. Right, where it's like one thing went wrong, another thing.
Well, that
went
one, I mean, there's 58 points in that ball game. I don't think anybody saw that coming. Mm-hmm. Then on the other end of the spectrum, who had, you know, the Texas A&M Miami game, you know, shut out at halftime, right. A double shutout.
It's like an Auburn LSU game from 2004.
You would have
thought
the weather was either snowing or something. No, it was a beautiful day out there, and I mean that one. That was the only one that, I mean, I thought Texas A&M would beat Miami. I was wrong on that count.
I did too. I thought Oklahoma was going to win too, and I felt great about that
Alabama.
Pick.
Tell you what,
early until they just fell apart.
Surprised by how much of a struggle it was for A&M offensively in that game, and I think that and Miami deserves credit, but the fact that A&M is one of those programs dealing with, I mean, you have an offensive coordinator taking a head coaching job since the last time A&M played.
Colin Klein.
And it wasn't like A&M's offense looked that great against Texas either.
No, they didn't.
I mean, that's got to be, like, look, and if Auburn goes 11-2 next year and loses in this round of the playoffs, the season was a tremendous success. But if you're A&M, to go from 11-0 and thinking you were
You're one of the two or three best teams in the nation.
Yeah, and a team that could be in the semifinals or better of the and could win the SEC championship game. And to go from that to you lost to your rival Texas, you didn't make the SEC championship game, and then in the college football playoff you put up a pretty flat performance and lose.
At home, your offense is just a dud.
Yeah, and it's like that's got to be like the emptiest feeling after an 11-2 season that's almost unquestionably a success, considering what they were going into the year, and it's still year two. Just it's got to be that's the give and take of an expanded playoff, is that a season like that can be viewed as not
what's,
enough.
What's crazy is that A&M Texas game was just the 13th time in 45 playoff games that there's been a one score or less
amazing
victory. I mean, blowouts, a lot of them, and I don't guess anybody really surprised at the fact that that Ole Miss and Oregon, you know, won handily.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if the answer is exclusion. It does feel like with 12 maybe guaranteeing a spot for a group of five team, maybe, like if you're gonna guarantee a spot for a group of five team, maybe the number should be more than 12 to make sure that you're getting in as many of the best at-larges as possible. I don't know what that number is. 16, the 24, 32. Like, I don't know where you...
I think that the teams for a group of five, they ought to be ranked. Yeah, however many teams are in the playoff, they ought to be ranked at least as high as the maximum number of teams in the playoff.
And
you got a 12-team playoff, group of five team needs to be in the top 12.
And it seems possible that if you expand it to 16, like you could have a year where a one-loss or undefeated group of five conference champion is one of the 16 best teams in college football. With 12, it feels like it seemed like a good idea, like giving conference champions the top four seeds automatically. Until you've seen it in practice a couple of times, and I'm not saying exclude the group of five. I'm saying it probably needs to be 16 if you're going
to
hold a spot.
Very selective.
If you're going to hold a spot for a group of five team.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
Philly fanatic.
Hey
man, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I just want to do a quick shout out to my Delaware Blue Hens. They won the first FBS bowl against Louisiana.
That?
And with this, their quarterback, Nick Minicucci, who he was reaching Joe Flacco's passing records. And what do you know? He's headed in the portal. It looks like he's going to Nebraska. It's just buy these people up. Unbelievable. You were talking about billionaires banking football teams.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Knight, you know, the owner of Nike, he's worth $21 billion, and he's bankrupting, they're broken, whatever. The
Ducks.
University of Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And it goes back to Steve Prefontaine. You remember him, long-distance runner?
Oh, yes.
Back in the 70s, right? Back then, I was running track. Everybody was running in Pumas with spikes in them, you know, similar to, I guess, the golfers wore. Well, Phil Knight gave Steve Prefontaine was the best long-distance runner in the U.S., one of the best in the world, to get to wear Nike. And so Prefontaine was so good that when they saw him in the Nikes, it just the track shoes, you know, he got into it. You didn't have any track shoes then. So it just shows you how a person with a lot of money can just bankroll the university. I'll end with my musing is Bruce Springsteen. Saw him at a bar right after he came up with Greetings from Asbury Park.
Wow.
Then saw him again later when I was at UGA at the Fox. And after they came out with Born to Run, which is my favorite song, everybody else likes Born to the USA, but basically that's basically a Vietnam War protest song. So that's all I wanted to say. And, you know, another thing about Auburn baseball and basketball, the problem, and everybody knows that they don't match up well with these top five teams, but we'd be nice if they could get the point spread down below 20. Yeah. I mean, that kind of upsets right. people to watch them.
Yeah.
You know, you get into the second half, deep into the second half, and the point spread gets larger and larger, and you already know what's going to happen.
Yep.
So that's it.
Good stuff. Good hearing from you, Philly. Yeah, Merry Christmas.
And in the case of Auburn, I mean, I think that those last two games, Purdue and Arizona, like you needed to see Auburn play so well coming out of the second half. Like those first 7 minutes of the second half were vital, and it was just Arizona blew the game open coming out of halftime, and Purdue was able to keep Auburn at enough of an arm's length. And if you're down, you know, you're down 14 at the break, and 5 minutes goes by, 7 minutes goes by, and to start the second half, and you've lost that by two or three, it's not so bad until you look at the scoreboard, and it's like you're down 17.
Yeah.
And then you're a run away from it becoming a rout, and that's what Purdue was able to do. That's, you know what though, those two teams are so good in the front court. Like it's like trying to find a way to beat Auburn last year. It's like trying to find a way to like overcome. Well, they've got Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell, and a lot of teams couldn't do it. A lot of good teams got thrashed by Auburn last year because they didn't have an answer in the front court.
That's right.
For Auburn. And Auburn was on the receiving end of a couple of those beatdowns.
Yeah.
Again, like you said, Bill, the good news is there's not a team in the SEC that comes to mind, maybe other than Florida, where it's like they've got a front court comparable
right.
to what Auburn was rocking with this time last year.
3-3, yeah. You're right. That's the biggest front line that they'll have to contend with. But I think this team can compete in the league, and then, you know, hopefully grow from that.
Good stuff, Philly Fanatic. Want to get to Mitch?
Yeah, let's get to Mitch for our final break. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. This is for B-Matt. Hey, really enjoyed the thing on Marty Robbins with your using.
Yeah, I enjoyed writing that.
yeah, race car driver and country music singer. I mean, that's quite a pair. I'm glad you guys are doing the musings earlier. Because, you know, you've had a couple of musings that you did right at the end, and I had a, you know, a story or a concert or something I went to I would have liked to talked about or let you guys know about. So I'm glad you're doing them earlier. And this is Coach Don Dunn. I know he's not there, but I got a rack of ribs on the grill tonight.
Nice.
And just wanted to wish you guys a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and a War Eagle. And we'll talk to you on the 2nd, maybe.
We'll be here.
Yep. Yeah. Sounds great.
Merry Christmas, Mitch.
Merry
Thanks
Christmas.
For the call.
Yeah, again, a reminder that tomorrow will be our last show until January 2nd. We're getting off from Christmas Eve through New Year's Day. So
nice.
Great to have that time off. We really appreciate that. So, we'll be back. Brian, you guys going to be in town, or are you heading out?
Yeah, just because of, Yvonne's breaking her leg, we're staying here, and the family's coming down to see us Christmas
sense.
Eve. So,
well, you know, you're You know, it's you're sort of like us now. You're the older folks.
But I did go by and pick up some turkey and ham from Don Dunn.
There you go.
Just so we'll have something to eat Christmas day after Christmas, because not everything's open.
That's a winner.
You cannot go wrong.
Yep.
Don's just been astounded at the turkey that they've just been.
I got some turkey and ham today.
Turn it out and turn it out. Yeah, great stuff. All right, well, let's get one more before we get to our final break of the afternoon.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey guys,
who's this?
I want to see what y'all's opinion is about. I mean, when DJ Durkin took over as the head coach this year, we were averaging giving up, 21 or 22 points. And the very next game, we give up 45 points on offense. And our defense went to, to crap. Stephen Pearl was the defensive coordinator, which is a new term for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But he orchestrated the defense for the last 7, 8, 9 years under BP. Do y'all see a similarity there that we have no transition defense? And our guys are standing. You cannot be more flat-footed than our guys on defense.
Well, I do think that's a problem. I think with the basketball team, a lot of it has to do with the 10 newcomers and still learning to play together.
Yeah, it's a little early to say that's what it is. I think with football, it is more understandable when a guy who has been able to spend time over there with his players when the offense is on the field, be able to talk with them, tell them what they need to do and check and things. Yeah, I do. I think it improved a little bit for DJ. Basketball, yeah, I've thought about that, and I've had other people mention that. But I do agree with Brian. When you've got so many new players, it's hard to say that's it, but it's also hard to just completely dismiss.
Right. Yeah, well, as a basketball guy, you play defense with your feet, and defense is effort. You may go 0-for-17 in a game shooting the ball. You might just be cold as ice, miss 8 free throws, but you can absolutely give effort, and you can move your feet and get in front of somebody. And we are not getting back on defense. That is troubling to me. That's the most troubling. I don't mind losing to probably 3 of the 10 best teams in the country. I mind not playing defense against them.
No, that's transition defense is usually one of those things coaches will look at and say, like, if you're evaluating your effort, right, at certain positions. How they rebound, how they defend.
Yeah, if you're getting beaten down the court.
How they, you know, that's going to be where you potentially have a problem. I do wonder in the case of Arizona and Purdue, I do wonder if you're opening yourself up to be beaten in transition because you need to find a way to overcompensate for their size, and so you're attacking the boards with everybody, and you're keeping guys closer to the basket than they might have been otherwise. But you're right. You like the excuse that it's been 4 of the best teams in college basketball beating Auburn. If they have problems with transition defense and they have problems defending the perimeter, it won't just be the best teams in college basketball beating Auburn. And you do remember, like, well, Bethune got close. Chattanooga was competitive longer than it probably should have been. Like, that's what concerns me about when you get into SEC play and you start seeing teams, I mean, even early on. Like, you got Georgia, you got A&M, you got Arkansas in your first 3. And those are teams that will attack you in transition if you let them.
Yep, and that is looking like 3 very good possibilities of 3 losses to start the season, because them kids can shoot at Georgia this year, and it's but anyhow, I ain't giving up on them, and I trust the process, as we've learned to say. Mm-hmm. But that's it's really concerning that we are not playing the defense that we have played for the last 10 years. And I wonder just if it's because Steven is not the defensive coordinator and we're not putting as much focus and making the boys get out there and really stick their head in, you know, into the grits and get it done.
That's a legit question. I mean, who has I don't know if we've heard Steven really say who is his.
Oh, I think he's still kept those responsibilities.
I know that they have been pushing the defensive lapses and they've been working really hard on them in practice. I just think it's a process, as you said, Bill. It just takes some time to get it right. Look at Auburn's team 2 years ago compared to the one a year later with Broom and everybody came back, how much better they were in all things, right, including defense and transition defense and all those things. It just, you know, it helps when you play together for a while. It helps when you,
of course, these days there's no guarantee who you're going to have next year.
Yep.
I mean, you can't go, well, just wait till all these guys are back.
Yep.
All right. We will get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us.
Appreciate the call from whoever
that was. We never heard who he was, but that was good stuff. We'll get to our final break. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
From all of us at Northwest Exterminating, we wish you
or email the drive at espnau.com.
Final segment here on the Monday Drive. Fun show today, and great having Brian in one more time before the holidays.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Looking forward to Christmas Eve, Christmas.
Can you tell everybody about what you and the rest of the super group have cooking up over at the website?
Lots of portal coverage, right? You know, of course, basketball a week from now gets Queens and it's SEC play. But right now, it's just all about the portal. The outgoing right now, or the expected outgoing, or the announced outgoing, and then starting January 2nd, it'll be who is coming in and you know, who's going to join this team and who's going to be part of this rebuild or whatever you want to call it for 2026.
Yeah, I mean, 20-something players already announcing they're going in. It's not done, I don't think, by any means.
Nope.
I think there'll be more players that'll be either making up their mind. There'll probably be some that know they're going in. They just haven't you know, gotten around to announcing it. I will say this. I think it has to be helpful for the schools to go ahead and have the players let them know. I mean, whether they're saying it public or not, to have a little lead time as we go into the portal, because they need to know what they have to replace.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the first things that Coach Golish did was start meeting with players just to get an idea where they stand. He got his staff together as quick as possible so they could get with their groups to get another idea where everybody stands and how everybody fits and are they spending the right amount of money for each player at each position. So they've had to accomplish a lot of things to figure things out. And I think that's all had an effect on, you know, how many are in the portal right now and how many they're going to have to bring in to change things the way they want it.
Yeah, it's it is going to be crazy. Brian, thanks a lot, man. Best of holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you and yours.
Same to you guys and everybody out there. Appreciate it.
Dan and I back tomorrow for our final show of the year. So we hope you will join us then. That's going to wrap things up for the Monday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.